finger. She'll do anything that I please. What a court, what a case, I can't lose. And the jury I bought for $1,000, man, that verdict is in the bag. What a court, what a case, I love the law. Law is a beautiful thing. As long as you hold the string, you'd be a silly so when.
Okay, I'm changing this music. We got to change this music.
You know, Harry just told me before that we can't do Isley Brothers Fight the Power because of copyright problems.
Oh, that's
on
right, because we can't on when we have it. I have my hat on because my head is cold.
Yeah.
So good morning. If it's 9 o'clock on a Friday, the third Friday of the month. First or the third Friday of the month.
That's one of them.
You've got Criminal Justice Insider with Babs Rawls Ivey and Jeff Grant. So welcome. This morning's show is sponsored by Family Reentry.
Serving the justice community since 1984 and
the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven.
Now more than ever.
See, we're getting this down. We're getting this down. Good morning, Harry.
Hey, Harry, good morning.
All right, so thank you to everybody who's sent us good words about the show.
You know,
I appreciate people listening.
You know, I was with Carla Esdell Bragg on Wednesday night at a family reentry board of directors meeting, mm-hmm. and she came up to me and she told me that this show is the talk of the community.
Good.
How about that?
We want it to be. And thank you, Tom Breen, for writing the articles after the fact.
Tom's been doing a great job.
So we had a little dust up on the last one with Smoya. What's her name?
Oh, Amy Smoyer and Jackie Lucibello.
Yeah, so people were on there talking about, like, because I guess the heading was ex-cons. And so people took issue with the word ex-cons, which is good.
Well, we like the conversation, but we still like Tom to be politically correct, I think. I mean.
And he changed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Happily changed it. But people were, like, going in on him. Even Mike Lawler.
Well, I think that Tom.
So, you know, I had to go in there and, like. Tom is not trying to be like whatever.
But like anyone else, it's an education process.
Exactly.
You know, and I can tell you that I work with at Family Reentry and in our ministry, I work with a lot of people who've been to prison.
Yes.
And I can tell you that most people who've been to prison are not as offended by terms like ex-con or ex-offender.
Yeah.
As people in the otherwise justice community who think they know what is best for us.
Yes.
So it's a strange mix there sometimes, but I can tell you that I am not offended by those labels. Mostly I am offended by the system in general.
Let's not lose sight of that.
That's not lose, of course. Yeah, right. Right. Why don't we just use words like either rehabilitation or failure to rehabilitate, right? To offer any services for rehabilitation. Although we live in a progressive state, and
we do.
And you know,
and this would be a decidedly different conversation if we were in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas.
Well, I think the conversation in Alabama today is better than the conversation it was a few days ago.
Well, we'll see.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Good morning, Andrew, wherever you are in the world.
Andrew Kaplan,
we're thinking about you.
Yep, you're our friend and star, so we hope you're out there somewhere.
Somewhere.
So we're supposed to have Lorenzo Jones here this morning, and I'm sure he'll get here. He's the co-executive director of the Catal Center for Health, Equity, and Justice, and they're mm-hmm. doing a great job community organizing and being a collaborator and convener of the criminal justice conversation here in Connecticut and in other places, too. So Lorenzo texted me. He's on the road from Hartford, and I'm sure he'll get here soon.
Okay. And you know him. You've been in his presence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lorenzo and his...
Because I don't know him, so...
Oh, he's a great man. Lorenzo and his partner, Gabriel Sage, are doing fantastic work all over the country, and they also have joined you on Family Reentry's Executive Council.
Yes.
So we're pleased about that. You know, we think that if we can round up a thought leaders and community leaders, and join in the conversation with them, you know, we can move the needle. So we'll see.
Okay.
All right, so let's do some housekeeping while
we're here. Do some housekeeping. What you got?
Well, a few things I want to talk about people who are going to be upcoming here on the show, and we'll have to get them the dates all worked out.
Okay.
But we mentioned Carla Esdale Bragg from Cornell Hill Scott. She's going to be here in January, February, in the spring, as is Andrew Clark from the Institute for, I'm going to have to get it right, Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy at Central Connecticut State.
Okay.
John Santa from the Malta Justice Initiative will be
here. Yay, we know John Santa.
We know John. We love John. And Chris Linus is going to be here. You probably haven't met Chris yet, but he's got a fantastic story. Just moved up to Connecticut from Maryland. And when you hear his story, you're not going to believe it.
Okay.
So I'm just going to leave that out there. I'm not going to tell his story for him. And we have been negotiating with Senator Murphy's office.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Murphy will be here hopefully in January. And so we're kind of leaving our schedule open a little bit because, you know, he's obviously a very busy guy.
Yes. Well,
but
gotta wrangle all those folks in D.C.
But somehow, I don't know how he does it. You know, I don't know how he manages to be in like six places at once.
Mm-hmm.
But he holds town meetings all over Connecticut.
I know. I went to some this fall, and I was impressed. He was all over the place.
It's unbelievable.
Like,
and he walked across Connecticut.
I
in
know.
The fall, you
He's
know?
Becoming the James Brown of the political world.
and he also did that filibuster on the Senate floor, where he spoke for hours and hours.
Yeah.
So look, I think he's a guy who really cares about us here in Connecticut.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah, you would hope, but you know,
I
don't know that every politician really cares about their constituency as much as he does.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're lucky here in Connecticut. We have two great senators and a lot of great congressmen and obviously more local politicians as well, but Senator Murphy's outstanding. So I think that as soon as we get a commitment from him and his office, Kayla, please get in touch with us, and we're happy to set that up as soon as we will move our schedule around for the senator.
And I just moderated a panel discussion hosted by my sorority, the New Haven Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta.
Yeah.
And you know, we do these conversations that matter. We actually started doing it last year, a series of conversations that matter to the community around topical stuff that's really important to the community. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we started off this year, the new sorority year, with criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some heavy hitters from the criminal justice world.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cooper from UNH, mm-hmm. who teaches criminal justice.
Yep.
There. We had Clifton Graves, who is probate-elect judge.
Yeah, what about that?
Yes,
huh?
and the executive director of Fresh Start. And Mr. Bloodstone from Project More, this mm-hmm. new initiative that they have over there.
Yeah.
That's an offshoot of what they do at Project More around reentry stuff.
Not Earl Bloodworth?
Yes, Earl Bloodworth.
Earl Bloodworth.
What did I call him?
Bloodstone.
Bloodstone. See, I've got natural high in my mind.
No, you can't get blood from a stone.
I was thinking of the group, Blood.
No, Earl Bloodworth does great work.
Oh, he's a great guy.
No, yeah, sure.
It was really good talking to him.
I think he's the chair of the Warren Kimbrough Project.
Is that what that is?
I think so. I could be wrong.
Yeah. And then we had another woman. I can't think of her name, Lord. Forgive me. But she was talking about adult probation. And she was talking about it from a place of how adult probation is moving away from solely being officers of the law and more holistic and user-friendly in terms of how they dole out and determine probation.
Mm.
You know, instead of just locking people up and just mm-hmm. like their only role is to gatekeep, they really are starting to train around and getting training around noticing mental health stuff, being the first detectors of these kinds of issues.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's just happened in the last 10 years
mm-hmm.
that they start, and they've got money, they've got federal money to sort of train probation officers to be on the front lines of mental health awareness.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting and powerful.
Yeah. I mean, the community is out there, and if we reach out or we're really interested in finding them and finding these thought leaders who are willing to share, we could really, you know, we can learn a lot.
Yes. Because there was things that I did not know versus adult probation and parole versus kids. Like, kids are not on parole. They have a different kind of
thing. Yeah, of
thing.
Course. Yeah, yeah.
But I had no idea.
There's a rich juvenile justice system. Yes. Enlightened in this state.
Yes, and they talking about there's a lot of services
absolutely.
Juvenile justice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what Lorenzo, when he gets here, he might want to talk about is what they're trying to do with adult criminal justice in the state.
Mm-hmm.
As modeled by what a great job the juvenile justice advocates have done in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising to me, at least, that it hasn't been done already. But there's a movement out there now, and Catal's certainly at the forefront of it, and the Tau Foundation. So there's a shout out to Emily Tau Jackson and Diane Serapina over at the Tau Foundation. And they are interested in not only just juvenile justice, and because mm-hmm. they fund a lot of that, and they also fund the Tau Center for Juvenile Justice at UNH, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Carbone runs that. But now into adult justice, too, and I'm forming a collaboration of the advocates all over the state. So I'm a part of that, but I think that what we really need is the kind of inspired leadership that John Santa and the Catal people, Andrew Clark at CSSU, and those people have put a lot of effort into it. And so I think we'll see more of that. By the way, Michelle Alexander is going to be at CCSU in, I'm thinking, February 28th.
But are you going?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right.
You know, Michelle, well, she left Ohio State a couple of years ago, and she took a visiting professor position at my seminary, Union Theological Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big deal because, you know, that's probably the most progressive seminary maybe in the world. I mean, certainly the preeminent urban seminary in the world. And so having her there with the likes of Cornel West and James Cone.
Don't you find it interesting that the need for a spiritual foundation or some kind of spiritual outlet while you're doing this work seems to go hand in hand?
I think there's certainly not enough of spirituality brought into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you pull anyone from Commissioner Semple to Mike Lawler aside and you have a conversation with them, or even the governor for that matter, I mean, they'll talk to you about what a key component it is in successful criminal justice and successful reentry of people involved in the system somehow connecting with some kind of form of spirituality. But in truth, I'm not sure that the government's paying for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that they're all at it. Oh, there's Lorenzo right now. Hey, Lorenzo.
Good morning. So he could come in and get set situated.
Come into the studio, get yourself set up.
I will tell you, though, I'm appreciating how foundations and stuff are sort of turning their money toward these kinds of initiatives. So, yeah, take your time. Don't rush.
Yeah, don't
relax.
You're okay.
Just grab your headset.
I'm sorry we don't have any coffee for you, Lorenzo.
Just get a mic in front of you.
You got to speak right into the mic. You've done this before.
Good morning.
Whoa.
Morning. All right, Harry will come connect you.
Yeah.
He'll
yeah,
got you.
Yeah,
you got to speak right in.
Morning. How's that?
Hey, Lorenzo, how you doing?
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
So, I'm not sure. Is Lorenzo on? Can we hear him?
Oh, no, he's not. There you go. Now you are.
Good morning.
I didn't have him up.
Hey, Lorenzo, how you doing? Were you driving down from Hartford? You hit some traffic?
Great drive, little traffic, no big problem. We're here.
Yes, yeah, so, right.
So, lower your hand so the camera can see you. You're on camera, by the way.
Yeah, we're on Facebook
I should
Live.
Put on some chapstick.
Because you know black people wouldn't ask you this. You know better.
I was rushing.
All right, now. You know your mama taught you better than that.
Yes, she did.
Lorenzo, tell Babs what you wrote to me the email last night. I sent out an email the night before. So I sent it to Lorenzo telling him all the details of where to go and what to do last night. And what'd you write back to me?
Perfect face for radio. I'll be there with bells on with a perfect face for radio.
Well, I don't know about that because you're quite handsome.
God bless
me.
Thank you. I have to admit, I was sitting in the middle of a meeting, and I opened my email, and I saw that. I started laughing in the middle of the meeting. So how you doing, man? Look, I haven't seen you in a long time, like 2 days.
Yes, I know, right? It's been an eternity.
So we gave you and Katal a little bit of an intro, but why don't we kind of dive right in to your story and what brought you to this work and why you're so impassioned about it. And I mean, don't spend too much time kind of on the mm-hmm. early days of criminal mm-hmm. justice here in Connecticut, but like, what's your personal mm-hmm. story?
It is interesting, right? Because even though I got my own story with the system, mm-hmm. right? I got my own, you know, like my own trip down slavery road, right? that brought me to the work, right? What actually brought me to community organizing was, and criminal justice reform work was harm reduction, and my sister. So I lost my niece and my sister. I lost my niece in the early 90s, mid-90s, mm-hmm. right, to AIDS. And I lost my sister a few years ago, not necessarily to AIDS, but, you know, after 20 years of, you know, over 20 years HIV positive, you know. And so we kind of got involved as a family, you know, with dealing with the system. Mm-hmm. And we didn't understand the Clinton crime bill. We didn't understand the consequences of, like, all these policies. Mm-hmm. People told us there were treatment, but we couldn't find treatment. Mm-hmm. And so I got into community organizing because my family, born in Chicago, mm-hmm. south side of Chicago, my family...
That seems to be the birthplace of community organizers.
Of course it is. Where else would you grow? You know what I'm saying? World changers. Change agents. Come on. Where they come? They make them somewhere else?
And, presidents.
And presidents. Oh, wow. Well, that's still under debate if you ask Trump. I'm always careful with this because my story isn't unique from the average person's story who came up, you know, and like survived the 90s. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I feel like is unique about it is that like we don't know as a family until much later about like this drug war policy, emergency room policy. And so what kind of moves me more so out of public safety work. So for the early 90s, I started as an organizer around 91. Mm-hmm. So about 96, 97.
Well, you were in Connecticut by then, right?
Yes, I came to Connecticut in 84. Mm-hmm. When we started doing this work, like it was just like nobody was talking about harm reduction.
And what does that mean, harm reduction?
Yeah. So I'm not an expert on it, right? And I'm still learning it, but ultimately, helping people reduce the harm to themselves and the harm to the larger community.
Okay.
That concept made sense to us because we were studying social capital at the time. And it was just kind of like, oh, like these shared resources in the community along with this harm reduction and then reentry. We thought like, oh, and this was before people were talking about mass incarceration. They were talking about, you know, prison overcrowding in Connecticut, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to get into that history as much as like there's like a major process that happens that kind of drives me personally. And it's not just based on my experiences, right? Personally, it's really based on like I really don't have a path to address like white supremacy, racism, slavery, classism. I don't have a way of addressing those things, mm-hmm. and I believe in addressing them. I don't have a way of addressing them without like really understanding, right? Like what happened to my family, mm-hmm. how my family kind of ended up in this place because we weren't some pro drug war people, right? We grew up, like I was born in 71, you know, I grew up south side of Chicago, so pro black and everything. Mm-hmm. And we kind of found ourselves in the mid 90s, like supporting a thing that we knew was crap, right? And it was a drug war. And so, like, as a family, like, we never really talked about how that disbanded our family. It literally dismembered our family. And we thought it was our fault, you know? And so when I kind of come into, like, an understanding of criminal justice reform or drug policy reform in the early 2000s, it's really harm reduction that says, like, you know, this could have saved my family's relationships and at this point, my sister's life.
Wow.
So, I know that you were a pioneer in community activism here in Connecticut. And I mean, maybe you could spend like kind of 2 minutes as to how you became one of the preeminent, if that's fair to say, community organizers, activists here in Connecticut, and why so many people know you and are connected to you and have learned from you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how'd that happen?
Wow. The short story is I started out as a, you know, drug dealer in the Asylum Hill neighborhood. I guess I don't start out there, but that's where I'm at when I'm starting the story.
Yeah, we all do that.
I got involved with a local group, local community-based organization called AHOP, Asylum Hill Organizing Project. And some old Alinsky organizers, you know, were trying to identify black and brown organizers that would be future EDs of community-based organizations, mm-hmm. but be community organizers, not advocates, not lobbyists, not activists, not researchers, mm-hmm. or straight hardcore organizers.
Well, when you say community organizers, because a lot of people mm-hmm. listening probably don't know what that means. So why don't you just define that mm-hmm. and then you can go on with your story.
Two things. So the difference I use, the shorthand, right, mm-hmm. is that community organizers change systems. Like you measure community organizing and changing systems, you measure advocacy and like reforms that you succeeded mm-hmm. at securing, mm-hmm. right? And so as an organizer, you can get reforms, but that's not organizing. Like you've got to go to the next step where like the system is operating differently mm-hmm. as a result of you engaging it. Sometimes with advocacy, the system doesn't necessarily operate differently. It may operate in a different way, but in the same kind of like drive. So treatment versus incarceration, you get like the community court. So you'll get like services and you'll get enforcement mm-hmm. where with LEAD, right, and other diversion programs, you're getting support, you know what I'm saying, and the enforcement is scaled down.
Mm-hmm. So as a community organizer, are you actually trying to find like-minded people on the street who are going to stand with you for some principle? Is that
No. That's what I'm doing as an advocate, mm-hmm. right? So as an advocate, I'm representing people, right? And I want to make sure I represent them with integrity and authenticity. So mm-hmm. I go and I talk to them. They talk to me. We have a line of communication. Mm-hmm. As an organizer, like your job is to be like this ghost in a machine. Like you're supposed to be able to move in and out of these spaces with people and don't connect them to you, connect them to each other based on their self-interest. Mm-hmm. Advocates will represent those people. Organizers say, no, you all represent yourself. Even if you go find an advocate to do that, mm-hmm. like an organizer's job is to make sure that those like leaders and directly impacted folks have the information are prepared for the fight they want to start.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
That's fascinating.
Wow. Yeah.
So you spent almost 2 decades doing that in Connecticut, yes?
2021 to be 30 years.
You got to be kidding.
So when did you come to the Catal Center?
We launched Catal 2015, January 2015. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That was after, that was with my co-director, now co-director Gabriel Saya, formerly of the Drug Policy Alliance, and Melody Lee, who worked with Gabriel in the New York office at DPA. And so me, Gabriel, and Melody founded Catal in 2015.
And what does Catal, does it stand for something? It has to be something.
Yeah, it's a thing. So Catal is, the name comes from...
I know it comes from somewhere.
It comes from the...
microphone.
I'm sorry. It comes from... Let me try to say this right, because we're live here, right? So, it comes
Hebrew,
from...
Greek.
No.
I bet you it's Asian and
it's scientific.
Oh.
It's right. So, Catal comes from the process of catalysis. Get it? So, catalytic change. Like introduce a catalyst.
I got you.
Introduce a catalyst. The change that happens is measured in kados.
You just took me back to my science. Go ahead, brother.
So what happens is you measure change
deep.
In that process.
See, that'll resonate with the Hoteps and the...
Yes.
Right?
So, who came up with that? Because it's a great name.
It's very Hotep.
It's a great name.
We went through, me, Gabriel, and Melody, mm-hmm. went through like a 3-month process.
Mm-hmm. Are they black people?
No.
No, they're white people?
Gabriel looks like a Benetton model.
Okay.
And Melody's Asian, right?
And you should have seen that. You know, the first thing I saw Gabriel the other night at the Catal event, and the first thing I said to him is, I said, you are Metro, man.
Dude, like, I am the ugly person in this relationship.
No,
definitely. Gabriel and I travel the world together.
Uh-huh.
I'm Europe, all these places. No matter where we go, down south, Canada, whatever, Oakland, everybody loves him. Everybody's like, oh, he's so...
Everybody loves you.
No. People like me. They like what I'm saying. They like my personality, my sense of humor.
But that's it.
No. Gabriel is like...
Oh, it's because he just looks good.
Yes. All like, right. People just kind of cater to him. It's bad.
I don't know if you know this, Babs, but about a month and a half ago, you know, we have a online white collar support group.
Yes, I know.
That meets on Monday nights.
Yes, it does.
And usually there's 15 or 20 people on video, and most of us haven't met one another. But our 85th meeting is this Monday night,
yes.
Which is incredible. And we had Gabriel on as a guest speaker about a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. He blew everybody away. And the thing that got us right away, because he's very, very smart.
Yes.
And the first thing he said to us was, when he got on, he said, you have no idea how extraordinary it is that you people have met for 79 meetings at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because most on-the-ground grassroots organizations meet twice or three times. They can't find common ground. They can't figure out what they want to do. And there's thousands of them that come together and dissipate just as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we've had 79 white-collar support group meetings, he said, is an amazing statistic. And he said to all of us how proud of ourselves that we should be.
Yes.
And I can tell you that in this space where people are oppressed and they're feeling rejected and their self-esteem hasn't come back, the first thing he did was build us up and try to give us some confidence
and
some compassion. Yep.
I like that. That's good.
An advocate would come in and be like, oh, you all are doing great work. Come with me. An organizer will walk into the room and close the door and say, you all are great. You're fabulous. Let's build on that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, get the hell out of here.
So tell me about what y'all do. Like, and why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? And what is the why that you're doing it for?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a public answer to that question. It's obvious, like, you know, in the drug war, reform, like, policies, change systems, rebuild the safety net.
Yeah, but you could have jumped into somebody's organization for that.
Mm-hmm. Because we are cantankerous, old, callous-covered, hearted organizers.
Okay.
Right.
I like that.
Right. And like we've, like I said, 2021 is 30 years. Like I've been trained and organized in Connecticut since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about on a weekly basis, right? There's not a project in Connecticut, nonprofit or social justice that don't have my fingerprints on it, you know, over the years. So like Gabriel and I thought this would be a good shot at. And Melody wasn't part of the original conversations early on, right? Because she was working for Gabriel, so we didn't really talk to her about it. But when we all got together and started talking about it, like, it was like, we wanted to not be what we thought the ACLU should be.
Mm.
Like,
okay.
We didn't want to be what we thought that national or global organizations or multi-state organizations should be. We didn't want to be a coalition or a convener. Like, we wanted to be, like, old sawdust on the floor, like, organizers and advocates, right? Who walk in the room and people don't clap for you, right? Like, you know, like those kind of organizers, right?
I think that's all of us.
Right? Like, one of the things I have an old saying, people say, well, Lorenzo, how are you doing? And I say, I'm making the right enemies, right?
Whoa.
Right?
Nice.
Right.
So, but how is this different than, I mean, because I know you were the executive director of a Better Way Foundation in New Britain, right?
Well, eventually in New Britain, yeah.
Yeah, but I know you were doing that for over a decade. So how is this the same or different than that?
So imagine a Better Way Foundation's like theory of change with the scale of like a small national organization. So the idea is to take the work, our municipal work, and build a national organization that could adequately provide support to groups like a Better Way Foundation.
Okay.
So if you kind of tear it out, yeah. you end up like, so I'll give you a great, an actual real life example of this. And when we, when I leave here today, my staff were meeting about it. The event we did in Hartford Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Don't think about the agenda. Don't think about all that stuff. Just think about the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
Right? So when we do meetings in Connecticut, usually we have to carve out a portion of our leadership teams or our volunteers to work that meeting mm-hmm. because we don't have the staff or capacity to provide the right staffing for that meeting.
There was a few hundred people there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this case, though, right, what we did was, and we did the same thing in Albany with our symposium, Toward Justice Symposium, mm-hmm. and the bail reform meeting. Like, our staff, like, shows up to that meeting, and they literally staff the meeting. So leaders who should be in participating with the meeting aren't out working the sign-in table.
Oh, I see.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of, it's a mechanical capacity thing mm-hmm. that we kind of fancy ourselves on. And then it's the like broader 30,000 foot, like analysis, strategy, policy stuff.
All right, so let me ask you a question. I know that you were intimately involved in the Close Rikers campaign and that you and Gabriel did. I think you did. You were in charge of the community organizing for Close Rikers. So, you know, the hashtag CloseRikers.com has become iconic, mm-hmm. and certainly, you know, Glenn Martin and those folks over at Just Leadership did a great mm-hmm. job. But the image I can't get out of my head is it's not the image of the hundreds of people in the street carrying the Close Rikers mm-hmm. banners and all of that, because that was powerful. But the most powerful image for me was there was a shot of a conference room or some kind of conference room, and there were maybe representatives of 100 nonprofits
That's right.
sitting around that
That's
conference
right.
table. And I know that you had something to do with that. Yep. So why don't you explain that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Rikers stuff was Melody. And because of the, I'll be honest with you, because of the gender dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things we try to do is make sure, because Melody Lee, like our managing director and co-founder, right? She ran that field operation. Mm-hmm. Like, she supervised all the staff, like not just ours, but as well as just leaderships, mm-hmm. right? And so like it was a major like task together. But yes, like the idea was that just leadership was or is like the center of the universe. Our job as Catal was to make sure that that center of your universe was like had capacity, just like we did Tuesday,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So like the same way our staff showed up and like took up and said, all you leaders, go do your meeting, go into your meeting. Like think of that, the Rikers campaign is a macro example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so like on the ground, our role very much was about training.
Y'all are like black ops.
Very much so.
Y'all are black ops.
The example used to describe us in the military, the infantry unit, right?
Yeah.
That shows up, creates a base camp, sets up all
and you don't even see
stuff.
Them. You're just like they're in and out.
And then they're gone. You don't even, like was never like Ajax was here.
Yeah.
So, but does that mean that that you don't get the credit?
Yep. That's exactly what it means.
But how does that work in terms of your business model? Does the people who need to know you about you know about you, or is there like a defined need? Here we have something that we're trying to accomplish, and we need a community organizing component. And who are the best community organizers in the country? And you're not going to look that up on in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of ask
right.
around.
Yep.
And that's
yep.
how you do it.
Yep. But that's why a Better Way Foundation doesn't have a budget. It's also why, like, it's like, so if I ask you another question, if I ask you that same question differently, like, right, was Martin Luther King an organizer or a leader?
Whoa.
Right?
I think I would, you know what I would say? I would say both.
No, I would say he started out as an organizer, but he got thrust into a position that he didn't necessarily want,
mm-hmm.
but that's what the situation
That's what the
dictated.
Situation called, right?
Yeah.
He was forced, right? So it's like, that's usually how it happens, right? And either way, if you end up being an organizer and you start as a leader,
but even as a leader, he was still an organizer at his core. You don't think so?
Not in the end.
Not in the end.
I'm saying because they are mutually exclusive.
You think so?
You can't be an integral leader and be an organizer.
Whoa.
You can't be an integral organizer and be a leader.
Oh, shoot. Take me to school. So, I'm learning.
Okay. So in community organizing, right, like your job is to make sure that leaders are prepared.
So what you're saying is you're a community organizer. That's where you're going to live. And you're not going to ever find yourself thrust in the position to.
I'm the man sitting next to the man sitting next to the man with a plan.
Let me change direction.
You know that's blackity black right there.
Blackity black right there. Let me change direction here for a minute and we'll get back.
Okay.
Because why don't you start off telling the story about us going to the Nantucket Project together? So a bunch of nonprofit folks were invited up to the nonprofit folks were invited up to the Nantucket Project in September.
Yes, I saw your pictures.
Yeah, and Lorenzo and I went together. Why don't you just tell that story a little bit from your perspective, and especially as someone who
would break it into houses?
No, it's not. Oh. Wait,
tell that story. Before we incriminate ourselves, let me just say, if you just tuned in, to Criminal Justice Insider with Bass Rawls, Ivy, and Jeff Grant. This show today is sponsored by Family Reentry,
serving the justice community since 1984,
and the Greater New Haven Community Foundation, or the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven.
Now more than ever.
Yes. And our guest today is the brother from the Catal Center,
Lorenzo Jones.
Welcome.
Morning.
So tell the Nantucket Project story, but especially since when you got the invitation and what your impression was of the way we got up there, mm-hmm. for example, and as someone who, that's not your usual lifestyle.
That's right.
That's not your usual lifestyle.
My first, little background, I'm sitting in my house one day. Now you have to imagine as a black man in America. I mean, in America too, but in Connecticut. Yeah. Whenever white people from Greenwich, Connecticut start sending you stuff, either you have.
Wait, I'm someone from Greenwich, Connecticut.
That's right, you're a white dude from Greenwich, Connecticut. Dude, so you always ask, you always kind of, you get that moment where it's like.
What they want.
Yeah, what they want, but you don't want to say no.
No, but the truth is you're prepared to be exploited on some level.
Yes, right. But if you black in America, you went to work today and was exploited. So yeah. it's like
all right.
It's happening. But what happens, though, that's great, is that immediately when I get the invitation and I make the connection to you, yeah. right, I know that there's a difference. Mm-hmm. Because I know you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I know the Nantucket Project. I know white folks, like rich white people in Connecticut. I know how they are. I'm a 6'3" and was bald for 30 years, black man with a lot of energy, okay? I never walked into a room in Connecticut where like the people from Nantucket Project were like, we want that guy with us. No, never.
But they did, didn't they?
But they did do that. Yeah. And what happened was we're going through the motions, getting ready to go, and then this thing emerges. Right? And everybody's like, well, how are we going to get to Nantucket Island? I've never been to Nantucket Island. So, well, some people will go this way. You all would be going on a private plane. That was it. As soon as I got that email, maybe
like,
a month before.
Boy, these white people live good.
I said, these white people know how to do it up. They do it big. But we get there, and you can imagine, we get on this plane, which is actually more uncomfortable than a commercial plane, to be honest with you. Except
well,
the soda was free,
right?
Yes, so 6'3" black,
no leg room.
But
it
was kind of nice.
It was lovely. Yeah. I'm not complaining. I would not take commercial if I had the option of private, but just to be, you know, balanced. So we get to the island, and they pick us up in a fleet of BMWs. Everybody gets their own BMW. There was some not so like culturally competent language had, but you know, to be expected, everybody's kind of like doing their thing. Mm-hmm. We get to this beautiful house, right, that's set up, and it's just an absolute great time. And what happens is, without going into all of it, like you end up with like this hodgepodge, like a motley crew, almost like a little group of little rascals mm-hmm. that make up our Keepers cohort,
yeah,
right?
We have something called the Keepers of the Commons that was put together by Richard Phillips mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania and Tom Scott here in Connecticut. And we were a cohort of nonprofit leaders from, there were about 12 of us. Mm-hmm. And so we came together as this mm-hmm. group to experience the Nantucket Project mm-hmm. together and then talk about common issues we had, not just in nonprofits, but also societal issues mm-hmm. and how we can best deal with them and bounce off the amazing programming that's done at the Nantucket Project.
Yeah, and there was this also, there was like this intangible thing of like immersing ourselves inside a space that really wasn't paying much attention to us, mm-hmm. but was very attentive to what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's fair?
And they did become curious about
us. Yes. And I mean, the next day, like by the time we left, right, folks were saying, that's a unique kind of project or thing.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to see like where that goes. And we would like to see them doing other things with like universities in the state, with organizations in the state, right? So like it ended up being, you ever seen the movie Step Brothers?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Catalina wine mixer?
Yes.
Like that's what this is. That's what this was, right? It was a Catalina wine mixer like scaled up, right? It was like the Catalina wine mixer is like an event from this thing.
Okay. Right?
And there's some very, very dynamic leaders in this group. Yes. And we've all stayed in touch. We had a video conference last week, yeah. for example. And so,
Facebook group.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're the inaugural group.
So,
of
what's
this
the
concept.
Value in all of this? What is that? What is the? What's the takeaway? What's the value?
I don't know if we know that yet. Except it's very valuable for us because we rode a private plane and went to Nantucket. They didn't give us any cheese for 3 days. No cheese, no salt. That was the one downside. No, the value of it really is that like there's this network of like high level. Conferences and meetings
that
sessions.
Does not get public. It's not
yes,
for public
that we
consumption.
We don't get into yeah.
right.
Yes,
and I think that's the bigger value that yeah. there's forces that work behind the scenes
yes.
that is not deliberately in the public eye and that is supporting the good work of what you all or what we all are doing.
Yes. But they're not letting us connect with those folks, right?
Mm-hmm. So when we say closest to the problem is closest to the solution, but the farthest from the resources and the power. This was uniquely 4 days
where we were closest to the
resources and the power. And we found out that there are a lot of good people out there.
Okay.
The people who are genuinely interested in the same types of issues and causes that we are. And in some ways that we were as prejudiced against them.
Yes.
Now that's pretty powerful.
Our predispositions, right? Our predispositions about how they were going to be were wrong probably 7 out of 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I would say 9 out of 10 times. I probably met one person. I was like, I'm glad I don't know you personally. But like, everybody, you know what it was? Not what it was, but one of the things that really helped, and this should be something we should steal, right? Is the heads up, hand out rule.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's this rule, no matter who you were, president of whatever country or like bartender at whatever. Right. You had to greet people with your head up and your hand out.
Mm.
Right. So like it wasn't like
that's like old school Big Mama teaching. Right.
Yes,
that's
how you
right.
Yeah. Do they say, peace be unto the saints,
yeah.
peace be multiplied. That's right. It's like a call and response
right?
thing.
So you
have baked into these like interactions, this not so much forced, but expected like exchange. So sometimes it'll be, hi, I'm Lorenzo Jones from Qatar. Like, what do you do? Hi, I'm Jeff. And that was it. Like, okay, we've done our due diligence. Then sometimes you run into somebody who just be like, I've been waiting to find somebody to talk to me about what I care about. And so you end up sitting there like, yes, I do believe that wooden blocks are that interesting.
but Lorenzo, in a way, this had to pull you out of your comfort zone in a way. And I don't mean just... I don't mean as a black guy in Nantucket.
Yeah.
What I mean is as someone who... spends your life being invisible
yeah
for a living
I am woefully.
Here you are where you had to step up.
I have.
That's pretty important, Jeff,
I was born with an intangible, like, gift from God, mm-hmm. right? Of having supreme confidence in myself.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's a rarity.
Yeah, right? Like, so for me, Nantucket is that. It's this next level, next couple of levels, right? But at the end of the day, ostensibly as an organizer, right, mm-hmm. I enter every space, whether it's Thanksgiving dinner or Nantucket Island, mm-hmm. as an organizer.
Mm.
So that provides me always provides me a way of, like, engaging people that doesn't put me in a position where I'm taking the risk. It's put in a position where they're taking the risk. So all I got to do is now present myself with authenticity and integrity and, like, earn their trust. That's what you do as an organizer.
Yeah.
Right. That's what you ought to be doing as a human being, I think. That's pretty powerful.
You would think.
Wow.
So what's next? We only have about 6-7 more minutes left in there. So like, what's next? What's the takeaway you'd like
people... I'm sorry, Harry. How much time do we have? Harry's like, not 6 minutes.
So what's the takeaway? Okay. What would you like people to know? How do they get in touch with you? If you could leave this with one thing that people out there can know about, what would it be?
Oh, the absolute most important thing, and we're going into, like, all these elections, we're looking at significant political shifts in, like, Connecticut's landscape, right? The most important thing at this point I leave with people is, like, get involved in your municipal, like, politics and system.
Mm.
Because, like, I'll give you a really quick, like really quick, not justified, like, skeleton of this, right? If you want to shift political landscape, right, and you start with the understanding that you need 700,000 votes to get elected governor, and then you know that senatorial districts are made up by state rep districts, mm-hmm. and state rep districts are made up of municipalities, and municipalities are made up of town committee districts. So, like, understand that hierarchy and, like, find ways of becoming very influential within your municipal politics, because if you do that, you can run that all the way up the political food chain.
So, Larissa, do you ever get approached by political campaigns to come in and do what you do? Because it sounds like you could.
No, when I say I'm making the right enemies, that's who I'm talking about. Like, politicians hate me.
But they could benefit from you, and they could absolutely use you.
Yeah,
if they could get past their own ego and foolishness.
If they wanted to be advocates and not just charismatic leaders, then yes.
Ooh.
Because you're standing for something in particular, and half the people are going to be pro, half the people are going to be con, and your job is to get that one extra vote, right? For
That's a lobbyist job.
Oh, that's the lobbyist job.
My job is to talk to everybody. I have the only responsibility I have as an organizer is to make sure that everybody I'm talking to is informed with the proper information.
Wow.
So fast. So fast.
You have to come back, Lorenzo.
So tell people how to contact you, website, email.
Yeah, catalcenter.org. Sign up for our newsletter.
Catal, K-A-T-A-L?
Yes, ma'am. K-A-T-A-L-C-E-N-T-E-R.org. Give us money. We can use it. Second of all, telephone number is 860-785-0757. Email lorenzo@catalcenter.org.
That's pretty powerful.
And I can tell you that Lorenzo's on the road a lot. So even for friends of his, sometimes tough to get in touch with.
Yeah.
But we can leave messages, right?
Leave messages, yeah.
Or hit me on Facebook, LinkedIn.
Yep.
Okay. Right? Yep. All right. Yep. I'm going to go right there and find you.
Yes. Yep.
So
I can get that.
And we did have some calls in there.
You're kidding.
Sorry. The conversation was too good. I'm sorry.
So we blowing off all the calls?
I'm sorry.
We're blowing off the calls, right?
People who are listening in were trying to call. I was so engaged, I missed it.
Yeah, we apologize. You know, it's only an hour show.
It's only an hour show.
The story of my life.
Yeah. So this piece will be up on the New Haven Independent in a few days. So you can leave your concerns or questions there.
It's on Facebook Live right now.
It's on Facebook Live right now. So you can absolutely
tag me.
Come in, tag Lorenzo, leave questions for Lorenzo. We'll make sure he gets them or whatever. Or find Lorenzo on on Facebook. So thank you, Harry Droz. Thank you, Andrew, wherever you are in the world.
Harry, thank you for your help this
Jeff,
morning.
This is such a joy to do.
This was a good one today.
This is a good one.
This was a good one.
And Lorenzo, you are a treasure.
Thank you. Lorenzo, thank you very
thank
much.
You for
happy
me.
Holidays.
All right, thank
yes,
you,
big
friend.
Dog.
All right, what kind of music do we have, Harry? I could just put something up. No, it's not going. All right, we got good
stuff. Lorenzo, if you can sing, you can.
So, have you seen?
Yes, go ahead, sing.
You can sing, go
ahead. You want to hear my rendition of Precious Lord?
Yes, oh, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead, go.
No, I don't really have a rendition. I have a preparatory process that I use to act like I have a rendition of Precious Lord, well, but I don't have a rendition.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Well, that's pretty good.
We're going to violate the copyright laws all over the place. All right, so are we on or off?
We're still on.
Oh, we're still on?
We're trying to play some music, and Harry's got to cue us up some music. And if you got some Phil Brown music, we could play that out if you want. We like Phil Brown. So you just let me know. Oh, you can't see? You know, this is the beauty of
this
live radio.
This is a great
radio.
Operation you got going.
Oh, yeah. You know, we get it in. It's never a dull moment.
You all have to broadcast live from some meeting one day.
Oh, we can.
Sure.
Like, we absolutely can.
Oh, yeah.
Be like in the back of the room.
I don't know how. Like Paul Bass says, if anybody asks you, just say yes.
You don't have to know how. That's how you learn to do it.
It's like, just say yes.
Yeah, can you imagine the van that says Criminal Justice Insider on the side of it?
Listen, that sounds so much like hard copy. It sounds like an investigative unit.
Yes, yes. All right, thank you, Lorenzo. Thank you, Jeff Grant.
Love you, Babs.
Love you too.
You
we'll see you all soon.
Okay.